Okay, here we are.
Hello.
It's just easier for us to get non-quiet time by going for a walk outside.
Yes.
Than it is to use my high-tech gear, my, expensive recorder and nice microphones and all that crap.
Mixer
and all that upstairs.
Yeah.
Because we can't actually get quiet.
Go figure. Yeah.
So we're going to do this today.
Yeah, here we are.
And see how it comes out. The gardens are just starting to come back to life.
Yeah.
Last weekend was the first. I mean, we could have gotten out early. Honestly, there's a ton of prep that we should be doing early.
Right. I could have been doing a month ago by some gardener calendars.
Yeah, like starting seeds at least a month ago.
Yeah.
Working on, if not more, working on the beds that aren't built yet.
Yes.
Or aren't completed. Yeah, I mean,
there's all kinds of stuff.
But this is what we've had, like, time and energy for.
Right, so. Wait, what's what we've had time and energy for?
The little we've been doing.
Oh, the little, yes, yes. We've, like, been doing a little bit.
I started cleaning dead leaves and weeding and pulling. You know, today I pulled, the leeks didn't make it over this winter. It was
Which
a strange,
I'm a bit shocked by.
Maybe it was too wet or something.
Look.
Their leaves are coming back.
You see those birds?
Oh, the birds?
Yeah.
Oh, are those black-capped chickadees?
Yes, they are.
We're pausing to look at a little gaggle of bright, bright yellow
chickadees
with bright yellow bodies and, like, black stripes. I don't know about the heads, but...
Well, maybe not black caps, but...
They're chickadees of some kind.
Right. They look like black caps.
I'm not much of a birder, but I do love to see them, you know.
Yes. The thing I'm always excited about is to see the Red Wings.
Yeah,
Not the hockey team.
Right. The red-winged blackbirds, they're you think it's just a black bird, and then it has this slash of color on it that
right.
is just almost just stunning to your
right.
eye.
It looks like paint.
Yeah.
Like it's been painted
yeah.
shellacked.
It's like just this, it's a little shock to your system to see such a bright color among
yeah.
all the drab.
All the drab.
But anyway, I think somewhere between last weekend and this weekend, we hit that moment where all the grass suddenly turned on again.
Bing!
Right.
Grass
it just
is on.
Happens. It actually happens in one day.
Right.
And I've seen it, like, in the process of happening as I drove to and from work.
And then one day, everything was green again.
That doesn't mean it's all back to fully, you know.
Oh, it's not summertime, you know.
But it suddenly goes from brown to green.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just happened. So
exactly.
We have a lot of the stuff we grew, either were perennials or were annuals or were perennials, and some didn't make it.
Yeah, some of our perennials didn't make it. Like, some of them were kind of tender and needed sheltering and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But some things are coming back. We're pausing because someone's getting rid of a bunch of
old-school filing cabinets.
Old metal filing cabinets and desks.
I don't like a credenza. That's, yeah, I can see. I can't justify a filing cabinet in our lives.
We would just fill it.
Exactly.
No,
exactly.
I mean, I have files, honestly, but...
I sat the road.
They're in file boxes at the moment.
Yeah. And they're fine there. They do well there.
They're fine there, and we don't really have room to bring this stuff into the basement just now.
Mm-hmm.
Or upstairs, but someday if we really set it up as a separate office space,
mm-hmm.
maybe.
Maybe so.
But, anyway, I was saying what plants came back.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly still alive.
Garden review.
And we've been doing, like, I've been weeding and adding soil and stuff to some of this, support some of these. The chives are going bonkers.
Yeah.
And they're very hardy.
So are the...
Sorrel?
Sorrel and lovage are kicking it.
The sorrel has come back. The lovage turned into this massive tree-like structure.
It was huge, awesome. And died back to the ground.
And, yeah. Didn't we cut it back?
No, just died back.
Okay, first we cut off the dead leaves.
First hard frost. And then this spring I actually pulled off all those dead.
Yeah, okay. It came back. It's already coming back from the roots.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have delicious lovage, which is, it's a kind of an acquired taste and sort of a bit of a specialty herb.
Yeah.
But
I'm here for it.
In some dishes, it's indispensable.
Mm-hmm. Mostly poultry, you know.
It's really good with chicken.
Yeah. And actually, if you have a really strong fish, like, I don't know.
Mackerel.
Yeah, I was thinking mackerel. Or something that's really got a, not a strong flavor, but its own flavor, like cod.
Yeah.
Like its own, really sort of, a sort of texture, like cod does.
Yeah.
Lovage is a nice counterbalance.
You could wrap it, like, in leaves.
Yeah, that's how much we get. We could just wrap our fish in.
But it's kind of a, it's a bit of a pungent flavor. Yes. If you're not...
How to try to describe it, like a bad-tasting celery.
People do use it as a vegetable. It's a little bitter. You would need to come up with some stuff to go with it to make it more palatable.
But I do like it in stock a lot, quite a lot.
It's good. It adds a nice flavor to other things.
Mm-hmm.
The one that adds flavor to other things that I want to grow more of, but is not a perennial, at least nowhere near this zone.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to mow us down? Is
not a perennial herb.
Lemon verbena.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that thing has the most fantastic fragrance.
And flavor. I like it.
And flavor, and I will just make tea of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so good. And I dried a fair amount, so I have some left.
Mm.
But I'd love to. I'd love to grow a wall of lemon verbena or a hedge of it, you know, like
verbena hedge. What's that?
But it's not perennial, so
it'll plant it every spring.
Yeah.
Kinda like the same dahlias.
Or keep,
which I love.
I guess you can grow it in pots and bring it indoors and it would add a nice aroma indoors, but the garlic chives are coming back too. And that's you'd think that's just a variety of chive, but it's a completely different plant.
Right.
So it's not nearly as robust as the regular chives, but...
But it came back.
It is coming back from the roots. Some of the roots died, but some survived.
And I particularly like those in egg rolls and dumplings.
Egg rolls and dumplings.
Yeah, so if you ever have, like, dumplings and you're like, the flavor's not quite there, I'm not sure what's wrong with this. It's because you didn't have garlic chive.
Yeah.
That's the flavor that you're looking for.
So we don't really have our spring greens ready.
No.
Other than the sorrel.
Yeah.
And this would be, if we had been ready, like
we'd be harvesting spring greens already.
We could be eating mizuna and stuff like that and some kale. But it's really just barely done freezing yet, so.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't have arugula yet, you know.
And there's a lot of arugula in the garden bed. I'm surprised I haven't seen some yet.
We may see it just come back from
random seed.
Leftover seed dropped in there. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But we're looking forward to the opening of
Coleman's
the garden center,
market.
Coleman's. Mm-hmm. And we're probably not going to raise anything from seed this year. It's a little late to even start some.
Right.
Thoughts on... The tomatoes that worked really well for us
last year
were cherry tomatoes, right?
Cherry tomatoes, all summer.
They were really prolific, like cherry and grape tomatoes were really prolific, whereas our larger ones...
not so much.
We've constantly struggled with ways to keep them upright in storms.
Right.
And
then to process them quickly when we get the glut.
Right. So, honestly, I feel like I would be content just with little tomatoes.
Because what we really are excited about is having these little tomatoes to eat fresh all through late summer.
You can see even out here that field cress.
Yeah, no, it's coming up. It's an early green.
Yeah, there's this native, I don't know, or invasive.
It exists.
Cress that keeps popping up all over our yard, and it's not really good to eat.
Yeah.
And it's mildly toxic to grazing animals.
Yes.
But it's called field cress, and it's just all through our soil, apparently.
It's everywhere. Everywhere, everywhere, everywhere.
So I'm trying to, I keep trying to pull it out. Because it appears like where our actual watercress didn't
grow.
Yeah.
Field cress grows. It's a bit frustrating, honestly.
So, and I think we're not going to start. We had a great experiment where we did, in fact, grow paprika peppers successfully.
That was a wonderful, that was a very tasty experiment.
And we harvested enough to get about, what, an ounce?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, we had a full ounce. I was going to say like a quarter cup, really. It was an ounce.
Right. Like an ounce or maybe or a bit. Quarter cup of paprika. Mm-hmm. That was our year's harvest.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, most of the peppers did not really ripen enough to dry and grind up by the end of the season. Which
and we tried, you know, and I should have just accepted that and stuffed them. We tried to, like, ripen them indoors, and that did not work.
We tried. That's the thing about the paprika variety. They're really, really good dried and ground up. They have a ton of flavor, but eating them fresh, they have no flavor.
Yeah, not so much.
They just don't taste good.
Yeah.
It's weird. Mm-hmm. So we think we're probably not going to do that experiment again because it was just represented too much effort for too little gain. Although I will say they're very pretty. Maybe we'll try it again some year when we can start them in February.
Right.
Indoors.
So they can get 100 days of warmth and sunlight.
Yeah.
And not, like, what would we give them, 50, 60 tops?
Yeah. Right. So it was hard. We were fighting the end of the season to try and bring a few more along. And
I'm also hoping we'll have more sun in the yard with that tree gone.
Yeah. That's a good point, too. That might allow us to grow a few things.
A few more things that need more sun to ripen well.
The big news about the yard, though, is that basically with my 2021 bonus from my employer, as well as some leftover child tax credit money, we finally ordered a serious kids play structure.
Yeah.
Suitable for
all our kids.
A large family.
Yes, a large family with older kids.
Right.
That, you know, will want some place that they can hang out.
So, this thing is going to occupy over
the center of our yard.
It's going to occupy 1,000 square feet in our yard.
Yes.
And now we're trying frantically to find someone or some company who can come out and prepare a nice spot for it. With like a bounded, bordered bed of wood chips and like properly drained and leveled maybe to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Our yard's never going to be leveled. But
nor would we want it to be. We want it to drain away from the house.
Right.
But this spot where you got to put a structure.
Right.
It needs to be level.
We don't want it sitting in the puddles of mud.
Mud.
And wood chips.
Like most of our yard is right now. Kind of disaster, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the mud situation's all about.
Oh, yeah, there's mud that forms. Eleanor's decided that she loves nothing more than to sit there and basically
roll in mud.
Coat herself with mud.
Yep. Having a fine time, she is.
So, she's a real
sensory seeker.
Sensory seeking Michigan baby.
Yes. Out here in short sleeves, it's 50 degrees,
and she's outside squatting in the yard, covering herself with mud. Maybe she was trying to insulate herself. Huh?
Well, maybe, I don't know. But no, she was also like rolling little, like little cubes and
mud balls
and stuff.
Yeah,
stacking, organizing.
So
love to see it. Love to see it.
It's a challenge then to get her cleaned up in the tub.
Oh Lord, that was surreal.
Okay, so I do have kind of a topic.
Oh, yeah, what's this?
I want to talk about our gradual things we've come to gradually understand about COVID-19, which are different than maybe we thought they would be. And so I guess you might call this...
mea culpa?
COVID-19 myths.
Oh, that.
And why people still believe them.
Oh, that.
And then also, what things do we think... Our predictions, so like what things do we think we're going to come to understand, but that haven't been like vetted as fact
standard,
yet.
As fact and standard. Well, CDC still doesn't publicly acknowledge that COVID's airborne, so that could be a long time.
But
it can be fact all over us, all around us, underneath us, over us. But I don't know that... these formal bodies will acknowledge the facts.
Okay, so that should probably be the first one, because I think
it's probably the most important piece of information.
Yeah, and I do think a lot of people came to understand this one at the same time that our institutional approaches to mitigation still seem to be completely in denial about this, which is that COVID-19, all the variants, are primarily transmitted by airborne droplets.
Well, let me say droplets. Airborne aerosols.
Airborne aerosols.
Aerosol. So much like measles.
Particles.
Airborne particles. Much like measles.
Yeah.
So measles' claim to fame is that it's got the largest R value that anyone acknowledges.
Right.
And so
that's how contagious it is.
Right. So someone with measles can walk into a room at a gas station, hang out there for 5 minutes, buy their gas, get a candy bar, and leave.
And infect 8 people.
And infect 8 people who came 2 hours later.
Yes.
Over the next 2 to 3 hours, another 8 people come into the room. And the person who's no longer even there can infect 8 more people in the room. So COVID is transmitted in that fashion.
Right.
And largely, I've only seen anecdotes and sort of minority reports about this.
Yeah.
For 2 years.
Early on in the pandemic, most of our precautions... involved gloves and sanitation. So we were wearing surgical masks when we went to Costco, but mostly Grace and I were very, very carefully wiping down every surface.
Surface in our own hands.
And our own hands, and changing gloves, and between stores, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, to be clear, many viruses are transmitted through to surfaces.
Right.
And, you know, most...
Yeah, and
things you can. Yeah, that's a good mitigation factor for things that aren't COVID.
Right. So, and I do want to say we don't know that it's literally never transmitted.
Well, no.
Via contact like that, especially like touching your face after you've touched the surface.
Right. Well, and especially for preschoolers.
Right.
Right. Who will slobber in one place and somebody else will come and lick that spot.
Come and lick the doorknob lickers, basically.
Right. So that actually is a significant mode of transmission for people under 5, right?
Right. However, this does not seem to be the primary means that COVID is transmitted by...
Writ large, no.
By any means.
No.
So we're no longer quarantining our mail quite the same way. We are still sanitizing a few things that come in the house.
Yes, things that we think our under 5s might put in their mouths.
Right. But most of that effort... Like quarantining the mail for 3 days.
Yeah, no.
We're just not doing it.
And we haven't done that for some time.
Right.
Just to be clear. I want to say late summer 2020.
Yeah. I don't know. Fall maybe. I'm not sure exactly when we stopped, but...
It wasn't like a formal announcement.
But, we're no longer sanitizing every can from the grocery stores.
It's really anything we think a toddler might put in his or her mouth.
Right. So this was kind of a ritual when we'd bring groceries in. We'd have a big sanitizing station set up. Mm-hmm. But we've abandoned that practice.
In large part.
So that's one thing. So that's one myth, mm-hmm. is that...
surface transmission for COVID
is surface transmission. Again, not saying it never happens, but it's not the way you're likely going to catch it.
No.
Second myth, I think, would be that we can achieve herd immunity.
Yeah, no, that's not, no.
And this is...
And not just we can't get herd immunity from vaccination, we can't get herd immunity, period.
Period. So, people suspected this. Smart people suspected this early on.
Thank you.
That it would be very hard, if or impossible, to achieve herd immunity through vaccination. Because given the R values of COVID, it seemed like we would need to hit like 90% fully immunized.
Yes.
Which was never really going to be a likelihood.
No. I thought 70% was really within reach.
Right.
And in many places, 70% of the population has gotten their first shot.
Right. Right. But it became apparent that... would you mention one of the things, like when Washtenaw County reports vaccination stats?
Oh, yes.
Like the little footnote and asterisk?
Right. So Washtenaw County, and many places, most places, I'm not exactly singling Washtenaw County out. I just have our numbers memorized.
Right.
Say, 75% of the population is vaccinated. And in fact, Washtenaw County has the highest vaccination rate in Southeast Michigan. Washtenaw County is 45%. Fully vaccinated and boosted.
Yeah.
75% of Washtenaw County has had
one shot. So that's one aspect of why we can't achieve this, which right. is that people don't follow protocols. But there's another big one, an elephant in the room.
The messaging is practically lies.
Is that the immunity from vaccination
wanes quite rapidly.
Wanes and... is and also literally wanes against the same variant, but also loses its effectiveness against additional variants. And there's the whole thing with asymptomatic transmission, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a big part of it, why we can't get to herd immunity.
Right.
But that I've also kind of held out hope that immunity conferred via infection
right.
might grant people lasting immunity.
That does not appear to be true.
That does also not appear to be true because we're seeing more and more evidence of reinfection.
I will tell you my slim holdout on that point.
Yeah.
And I have to just give the caveat, this is extremely slim
right.
and it's a very narrow category. I'm wondering about people who got sick once and maybe not on a ventilator sick, but good and sick, missed 2 weeks of work sick.
Basically, people who had more severe cases,
mild cases,
still considered mild,
but more severe cases
as far as not life threatening. But
so they got really sick.
Yeah,
they did not appear to develop long COVID.
They spent a good long while recovering,
but did not appear to develop long COVID, and then are constantly re-exposed. Be very careful here. I said re-exposed,
not reinfected,
via their work, via etc. Right.
Right.
They appear not to be getting sick. They appear not to be picking up new variants. I don't know if that's sort of a self-reinforcing anecdote.
Right.
Because there is data that healthcare workers who are reinfected
get sicker and sicker
with each, or like they have an infection, it's not so bad. They get vaxxed, they have another infection, not so bad. Again, not so bad. Number four or number five knocks them on their ass.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what we're seeing amongst healthcare workers, who would ostensibly be the textbook case of this, right? They're
right.
constantly exposed at work.
They'd be the population you expect to see...
developing robust yeah. immunity through repeated exposure, but not infection, right?
So what makes this, I think, a myth in part, is that we would like to imagine that that COVID is like measles. Measles vaccination, even 50 years ago...
Yeah.
really does seem to leave you with very long-lasting immunity.
And we're only now seeing in the last 20 years
variants
of measles
yeah.
that are evading your vaccination.
And we're seeing outbreaks also in communities that are vaccine hesitant or...
Well, but here's there's more about this, and I don't want to dive off the cliff into measles.
Okay, but measles is kind of... What I'm saying is measles may be like the mental model we were hoping for.
Yes.
A mental model of how we were hoping COVID would behave.
Right, we'd vaccinate everyone, and then we'd slow spread, and then we'd reach some kind of herd immunity threshold, even if it was very high.
And the vaccine, the virus would effectively fade out from common circulation in most areas,
and actually,
with maybe outbreaks here and there.
Exactly. And I think that's the model that was sold to the public in January of 2021.
Right. Another model, though, another mental model that I've been kind of holding out hope for is also the way that chickenpox / shingles works.
Yes, yes.
Right, which is if you have chickenpox in childhood, every time you're exposed...
It's a booster.
It acts as a booster.
And regular exposure means... You don't get shingles later on.
It means you're less, you have enough immunity that the virus is less likely to come back out of your, lives in your nerves.
Basically, it doesn't come back, resurge from your nerves and attack your nerves.
Right. Right. Having had shingles, I had.
Yes. Right. A uniquely horrible experience.
I don't recommend it. The long-term pain, nerve pain...
Nerve damage.
...is horrible.
Yes.
But you do hope that maybe...
Maybe COVID could be like that.
Maybe COVID could be like that, and people who were...
And that long COVID's like this aberration, right?
Long COVID's an aberration. So that's like, probably going to get us to myth number three. Well, myth number three...
Well, myth number two is that herd immunity is a myth, right? And the little bit that I was saying is, I still want to see, I haven't seen a study talking about folks who've had it and been constantly exposed and aren't getting sick again.
Right.
How they're doing with Omicron, what's going on. I'd like to see that study. I'm not holding my breath. But that's like the only, that's my last bastion of hope around that. Herd immunity. Right.
Yeah.
I don't think it's real. I don't think it's possible.
Right.
By any means. Because believe me, I was hoping for it. That, you know... We'd all get over some kind of hump of exposure, and then we could re-expose ourselves regularly.
Yeah.
And really kind of rest easy for, until we see what comes next. Until we see how it plays out in real time, over time. But I'm putting that on the shelf. I don't really embrace that anymore.
Okay.
So number three.
Number three, I think, is this idea that COVID will become endemic, A, and B, that's okay.
Yeah. If you're a eugenicist, it's fine.
So, yeah, COVID may in fact become endemic, but in the same way that, like, malaria is endemic.
Tuberculosis is endemic.
Tuberculosis is endemic.
Killing people for no good reason.
Not like common colds are endemic.
Right. Not like hand, foot, and mouth is endemic.
Right. Where it usually, it's still circulating, people get it as a common childhood disease. There's,
or even as adults, yeah.
There's not necessarily a really good vaccine for it, but it usually doesn't cause much damage.
Or even real harm in the illness.
It's an annoyance.
Yes.
All the evidence suggests that COVID will not be like that.
Nope.
If it does become endemic, that's not a good thing at all.
Because it will slowly wear the human population down. I mean, really, wear it down to a nub if people have some kind of unique genetic resistance.
So that's maybe, you
that's
know...
That's the evidence we've seen.
That's successful, like, sort of a successful endemicity in the long term.
In the long term, I'm talking
whereas
50
the long
years.
Term might be, like, the history of human civilization.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. You know, thousands of years.
Right. And moderns would have you believe that we learned something from the bubonic plagues.
Right. Right. Okay, so that's three.
Mm-hmm.
Number four has to do with long COVID, and I guess the myth would be, there's probably multiple myths around long COVID, but one of them would be that, it's really rare.
That never happens.
It only occurs in a handful of people, or it doesn't occur in vaccinated people.
Lies. Both lies.
It
happens because you're vaccinated.
Or it happens because you're vaccinated. Or it's actually a fake thing. It's like...
It's a conspiracy theory. It's a mental illness thing.
You're a hypochondriac if you report...
Long COVID.
You have to get back on the other side.
Reporting that you have long COVID is an indication of hypochondria.
Hypochondria or mental illness.
Right.
And if you have these symptoms, they're actually psychiatric symptoms.
Yes.
I'm saying I don't think any of these things are true.
Lies. All lies.
Right.
Right, right.
So that's... I've kind of outed myself on Twitter as having mild long COVID symptoms. Mm-hmm. By mild, I mean I haven't been hospitalized.
Right. But, that's what anyone means by mild. Oh, right. You didn't go to the hospital. That's nothing, bro.
Right.
Walk it off.
Except that it bothers me every single day.
There's that, yeah.
And that's... That shit will wear you down.
Yes, it will.
I have had... it's gotten better or worse. This weekend was kind of worse. Mm-hmm. Like March was worse. Mm-hmm. Most of April's been better. But
yeah.
Very intense fatigue at times. And I would describe it... Okay. I would describe it as also my brain fog.
Brain fog.
Difficulty concentration, difficulty in concentration, difficulty with speech, as I'm evidencing today.
Yes.
Not usually this incoherent.
No, I've had a resurgence of my, what do you call it, my speech impediment.
Stammer.
Yeah.
We've seen this in a lot of people.
Yeah.
I have constant tinnitus every day. It sounds like some days better, some days worse. Some days it sounds like there's an old school modem in my head, like changing pitch between a couple of pitches as it's like downloading data or something.
Maybe that's your brain.
Maybe it's the microchips in the vaccine downloading data.
Oh.
Something.
I heard that happens.
Yeah. But it's troublesome. I'm sitting there at work and I'm hearing this two-tone ringing that keeps cycling in my ears, while I'm trying to keep myself awake, while I'm feeling very, queasy and overstimulated, while my fingers and toes are burning and like purple.
Yeah.
So.
Good times.
It's not great. I've been talking to my doctor about it. My tachycardia has improved.
Which is good.
I have a fitness tracker now, and I've been monitoring my heart rate. And some afternoons, I'll just be sitting at my desk. Or actually, one point, I came upstairs after work, and I sort of lay in the bed for a while, and I was reading. And my fitness tracker was telling me, and I could feel it.
You're in the fat burning zone.
That I was in the cardio zone.
Woo.
That my heart rate was exceeding 140.
Okay, that's nice.
Just lying there.
Yeah.
And, like, okay, well, people might say, well, that's anxiety or that's a panic attack. And I'm like, I know what those things feel like.
This wasn't that.
This was just my heart going off on its, doing its own weird thing for no apparent reason. And it's not every day. It's better than it was in the first half of 2020.
Oh, but just to... Get back to
some
of the data.
This is the thing.
This is the thing. And to get back to some of the data here.
Yeah.
I know this is this idea of long COVID not happening to vaccinated people, only happening to vaccinated people, not happening at all, being a mental health issue, all those things. Put them aside.
Right.
I do not have good numbers on the unvaccinated population. But among vaccinated people, some sources say 10% develop long COVID if you have a breakthrough infection.
Yeah.
Breakthrough infections are extremely common in vaccinated people.
Right.
So 10% of those people will develop long COVID, at least. Some estimates say 30% of breakthrough infections in vaccinated people will develop long COVID. So take 10 of your vaccinated friends.
Right.
Right? Actually, take 100 of your vaccinated friends.
Right.
Right? 100 of them. Probably about 45. Actually, I'm being generous. 45 won't have a breakthrough infection, right?
In a given year.
In a given year.
Yeah.
55 of them will have a breakthrough infection.
Yeah.
5 or 6 of them, at a minimum, will develop long COVID. 15 to 18, probably. But at a minimum, you're looking at 5 or 6 of those people out of 100 vaccinated people are going to develop long COVID.
Yeah. So, we don't know how to treat all this stuff yet.
Nope. Not even clear if it's one thing.
Which brings me to, like, okay, myth number 5. I apologize if these are a little muddled. I did not write anything down for this. I just sort of ran through it in my head as we started our walk.
Yeah, yeah.
Myth number 5 is the myth that, well, okay, we know what COVID does to you, so even if you're reinfected, it's probably not that bad.
Yeah. Multi-system organ damage.
We're seeing now these weird outbreaks in children showing
hepatitis.
They're developing hepatitis.
Toddlers.
And diabetes.
Toddlers. We're not talking type 1. But even if it was, really think about that. Think about an epidemic of type 1 diabetes.
Yes. We're seeing a huge rise in psychiatric illnesses among adolescents, including...
Oh, that lockdown, though!
Yeah.
Drove all those kids crazy!
Including psychosis, like,
full-blown psychosis.
Yeah, including psychosis and suicide. Mm-hmm. And we're discovering that, in fact, like, psychotic episodes and severe anxiety and depression and whatnot are common after effects of COVID infection.
And this is not to say that your illness is entirely psychiatric, right? It's sort of like Lyme disease
right.
has a psychiatric component.
Sure.
Like untreated Lyme disease will lead to psychosis.
Yeah.
Now,
the whole premise of the TV show Joan of Arcadia.
Right, right.
Well, sort of.
Well, yeah, it was the premise for the first season.
It was like the big reveal at the end of season 1.
Right. But now, here's the thing. When you treat Lyme disease, the psychosis goes away.
Right.
So it's dangerous to refer to Lyme disease as a psychiatric illness.
Yes.
Because you will not treat right. the patient if you do that.
So, that's
what I call it, or what is called a psychiatric presentation.
Right, right. right. And we
so
know...
But COVID has a psychiatric presentation in some cases.
But we know now, we're starting to understand the way it actually physically, the virus easily crosses the blood-brain barrier.
Slips right in.
And we know that the wild type and alpha and whatnot caused a loss of taste and smell, and we have an explanation for that now as to what it attacks, what it binds to, what it destroys, mm-hmm. damages, and like the Omicron versions don't seem to do that as much, and we mm-hmm. actually have evidence, physical evidence from MRIs and all this mm-hmm. of it, where it attacks slightly different structures in the brain mm-hmm. that don't result in exactly the same symptoms.
Right.
But we also know that it causes significant, statistically significant, loss of brain mass.
Brain mass.
Right? Literally shrinking your brain.
The thing that kind of freaks me out, that I surprise no one's more freaked out about, cardiologists right. are freaked out, but all the vascular damage is stunning.
Cardiologists are freaked out.
From mild cases.
Mild cases that
6-3 days back at work, no symptoms.
Seem to not produce any long-term harm, and then people
like stroke out.
A lot of strokes. And believe me, I've worried that maybe I have had
a
very mild, you know, cerebral vascular damage.
Yeah.
Especially when you can't, where it seems like you can't speak.
Yeah, you try to get words out and they can't come out.
Right. So, anyway, I guess that would be number 5.
5, yeah. That multi-system organ damage. That COVID, the mild cases of COVID, aren't a thing. You shouldn't avoid it any more than you avoid a cold, because it doesn't do any more damage than a cold does. The truth is, even mild cases of COVID cause multi-system organ damage that really, you know, you don't know you have had that damage until you find out that you had the damage,
until you're in the hospital with your like jaundiced, you
right.
know, or
your liver's not working anymore,
or you know, you need to, you're on the verge of renal failure. Yeah.
That's how you know that you were damaged by your COVID infection. But really,
right.
you were sick 3 to 5 days, back at work, you didn't have any symptoms, and now 3 weeks later, a month later, you've got some kind of system failure.
Right, and the unexplored frontier of all this too, mm-hmm. we're seeing it attack all these systems in the body, but the unexplored frontier, poorly understood so far, and I believe we are going to come to understand this as is that reinfection produces cumulative
damage
to the immune system.
Yes.
As well. In other words, it's kind of the opposite of this idea that every time you're exposed, you get an immune boost and then your body goes on its merry way.
And you're stronger for it, right?
And I think a lot of the...
And believe me, I clung to that idea.
We didn't want to believe this.
Right.
But a lot of the collateral damage to your organs is collateral damage caused by immune overreaction.
Right. And that every infection causes more immune dysfunction and further damage to your T cells, such that your T cells cannot recover.
And the long-term effects of this may manifest in 10 to 20 years or longer as you got cancer, which your system would have otherwise destroyed before it got a foothold.
Right.
Before it started, or you got some other chronic illness, like, you know, they're also discovering all kinds of things about MS these days,
yes.
about how multiple sclerosis seems to be caused by virus,
right.
viral infection.
So there's this thing, right? Coronaviruses are, most of the common colds that we experience are coronaviruses. Some of them are like, you know, RSV or something, some other thing.
Right.
But most of them are coronaviruses. And that initially gave me great hope because humans evolved along coronaviruses and developed, you know, sort of an immune stasis with them.
Yes.
Right. But here's the
common
thing.
Common colds are endemic and they generally don't kill us.
Right. We still should take greater effort. This is why I keep encouraging people to keep washing surfaces. The more we wash surfaces, the more we protect vulnerable people. The more we wash hands, the more we protect vulnerable people. That has always been true. That's not
right.
some new COVID thing.
Right. And so, just a personal report about this, like the 2 years plus that we've spent largely locked down, even out of, although I wouldn't call our lockdown anything close to like a Shanghai style lockdown.
Not even in the ballpark.
We haven't, aside from one or two mild viruses, we haven't had any other illness.
Right. No, it's really been pretty great in that regard.
Because looking through, I'm editing journals from 2018 and 2019 and 2017, and we were sick constantly. Every 3 weeks or so, we had another virus in the house,
right.
including hand, foot, and mouth, including, you know, fifth disease, including...
Yeah, all of it.
And Grace and I also would get whatever.
Whatever.
So
the thing is, there's one coronavirus that is not in the SARS family that is really hard to manage. There's this one coronavirus that attacks your T cells. SARS-1 attacks your T cells. SARS-2, better known to people as COVID, attacks your T cells. The only other thing we know about the T cells is HIV.
Yes.
So it's this like group of four things, right? And one of them is COVID attacks your T cells, and that's what makes it dangerous. That's
right.
how HIV kills people.
And that's why people, we're seeing in COVID cases now, I read a horrific case story about a guy who had, end up losing half a lung to a very rare fungal infection.
Yep. Something your body would normally be like, what the hell is this? Get out of here.
And
you'd never notice.
This is the kind of thing that frequently killed people during the AIDS.
Yes.
I mean, it still does, but during the worst of the AIDS epidemic stage was not the the virus itself, but the damage to your T cells, allowing opportunistic infections of all kinds that normally would not even, that normally would brush off. Including funguses. you know.
Yeah.
Right, to take you down.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing that with COVID.
Yeah.
So.
Not pretty.
Not pretty. Not mild.
Yeah.
Not a cold.
No.
So, what do we do?
I have a policy proposal, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
But no one wants to do that, so I feel futile even lifting it up. But, and part of this, I think, is the thing that I think people really don't want to hear, is that I think masking is going to be a part of our lives in some regard from now on. And I know people don't like that, but I think that's true. And in some regard, for most people, and this isn't to say someone who's just like, you know, fuck it, I'm not wearing a mask, I'm going on. You know, that's I think in a larger context of better mitigation, I think you're fine to make that decision about your own life. But again, in a context of more broad mitigation. But I think for most of us, most of the time, in public situations, we ought to be masking.
Yes.
That's the first thing that's really a bitter pill for a lot of people. The thing that I think is actually not really a bitter pill for anyone, but maybe really hard politically, is that all new buildings and absolutely without question, no restaurant should be allowed to operate without ventilation and filtration, full stop. You can't open the restaurant to the public unless you're ventilating the space, that is to say, bringing in new air from the outside.
Meeting some sort of standard.
And I would say, you should change out the air in your room 3 times an hour with outdoor air. Secondly, filtration that filters at a minimum 4 times an hour. That filters the room's worth of air for every 15 minutes.
Uh-huh.
So if you're not doing that as a restaurant, you can't invite people to come in, sit down, and take off their masks indoors.
Right.
I've come to that conclusion from a lot of reading. I can show you what I've read or whatever. You don't have to believe me. You can go do your own reading, whatever the hell you want. But that's, I think, is the baseline for opening a restaurant or any indoor space where you're expected to remove your mask to use the space.
Yeah.
I think all public buildings should have that ventilation, full stop. The township offices, right? You might have to go there in person to pay a bill or lose your home, right? You don't have any choice about being in
yes,
this space.
Yeah.
It ought to be filtrated and ventilated. And really, I don't think the health department should issue license to operate without ventilation and filtration. I think indoor public masking is an absolute default. I can't make a really good case for mandating that you and I wear a mask for this walk.
Well, outdoors, no.
Right, no, I can't. I think, though, if you're going to gather
public... We have plenty of ventilation.
Right, so I can't make a case that would be worthwhile.
Yes.
However, there are these outdoor events, like, say, a wedding or a concert.
Yes.
Or even some of these play dates and, like,
well,
you're gathering 20 more people.
In close proximity.
Where people are going to be physically close
to
each other.
Not just across the table, but maybe you're seated, you know, shoulder to shoulder.
Yes. Those kinds of public outdoor venues, people ought to be masked. Yeah. I mean, they should be. I don't see a good... Now, mind you, the state doesn't have a good track record of writing healthy legislation.
I mean, there was a super spreader event at the Rose Garden.
Yes.
An outdoor you know
event.
What? They did go inside, though, for
brief,
like
right?
Six meet and greets and...
And all that stuff. But you know, there are documented cases of outdoor events
yes.
that were super spreader events.
Yes.
Where people were just in physically close contact. So, while I would not mandate anyone who appears outside their own yard to be masked at all times, I would say that if you're going to do something that maybe you need a permit for,
right,
you're going to gather a large enough crowd that you need a permit, then everyone needs to be masked to be there. And this is not about your personal safety, like these rules protect you.
Right.
These rules protect people who have no choice but to encounter your virus
yes.
somewhere else in the community. Maybe they didn't go to that event, but they go to the damn post office.
Right.
You know, They go, you know, they go to get groceries.
And they're in proximity to someone who's at a very high risk.
Yes. So, so this, it's really not about you. It's literally about the public good and public safety.
And that's part of the thing, too, is what I'm trying to convey is that we can't so easily put people into the low risk and high risk boxes.
No, a lot of people who think of themselves as low risk have had COVID 3 times and are poised to be very, very,
very sick
next time.
Yes.
So, and they won't get Paxlovid because they are not listed as high risk.
Yeah. It's also still hard to achieve, even if you know what you're supposed to do. It's hard to get it in time.
Hard to get it in time in your 5-day window.
And there, you know, treatment centers only exist for small population centers and, small parts of the country. I mean, near population centers. I want to talk about one more thing.
Oh, sure.
Which is, how do we, and this is of particular concern to me as an employee, right? As I'm being pressured to some extent, not so much as I have been in the past, but to return to normal as far as going into an office.
Oh, and eating with people at restaurants?
Eating at restaurants, meeting, you know, going out with colleagues to restaurants, traveling for work to go work with people in other states, you know, flying and all that. What do you do about this sense of gaslighting? So, like, at the same time that I'm being told, oh yeah, it's really great, you should, we always get together for lunch, you should come and, you know, visit, or you should go meet with your colleague for this and that and whatnot. Now, my, you know, my management structure isn't saying do this or you're fired, but the implication is that not doing it is a career-limiting move.
Yes.
Right.
And not socializing in these ways.
Yes, is bad. Will be bad for my future at the company and all that. And at the same time, I see that they're reporting, oh, they've had an outbreak in their building.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
Like, and they're doing their own contact tracing, you know, but it's just this sense
that people get sick,
that, this is like this push to normalcy, push to believe in normalcy, seems like gaslighting. And then we have people who are much more explicitly gaslighting us.
Oh, yeah.
In particular, a comment, you can run, but you can't hide.
Which, that's gaslighting. That's a goddamn threat.
That sounds like a threat.
You're gonna come,
right? You're going to get it again. You should stop trying not to. You should absolutely, you should stop trying not to. You should, you know, oh, also, your kids are going to hate you.
Well, they already do. It's not really a big deal.
Teenagers always hate their parents, at least at some point.
Yeah.
But, yeah, your kids are going to resent you for the rest of your life. I'm like, you know the old episode of MASH where Hawkeye outs this kid who was really 16?
Yeah.
Right. It was actually, played by...
that wasn't Ron Howard, was
Ron
it?
Ron Howard, yeah.
Yeah.
And he says, when he's, like, being taken out to be shipped back home, he tells Hawkeye, I'm going to hate you for the rest of my life.
I hope it's
and
a good
Hawkeye
long time.
Says, let's hope it's a long and healthy hate.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of how I feel, like responding to these things. I don't want my kids to resent me or hate me. I will hope that they will understand that we've tried to make the best choices for their long-term health
and well-being.
That
we could under the circumstances.
So what about that gaslighting?
What about that gaslighting? Oh, gosh. You know, people kind of don't like to talk a lot of shit to me because I'll just say, don't gaslight me. So the problem is, I do things that make me unemployable.
Yeah, you don't need to defer to a employer in order to stay.
No, for real, you're the
employed.
Only person I defer to.
What? Oh.
You're the only person I defer to.
But yeah, so... But what is that? So,
so it's I think it's really, it's a shitty position for people to be in. They've got to make nice with folks, but these folks are literally trying to harm them physically. And
Or they're just, and like, then, like, they're repeating bad talking points.
I mean, I think there's probably a good space in the world for a list of good talking points to respond to these things you hear over and over again.
So one of them being, like, for example, the CDC itself.
CDC itself is gaslighting us.
About the recommendation that you can return to work or whatever after 5 days after infection.
Yeah.
You don't need to test negative.
Nope.
And I'm hearing that actually an awful lot of people are still infectious after
10 days.
10 or 12 days.
They're still testing positive.
They're still infectious.
They still have symptoms.
They go back to work or whatever and infect their
colleagues.
So, I don't know.
Who aren't free. Who, in other words, they infect their colleagues who feel pressured to be in this indoor space unmasked.
Right. Or masks, because masks aren't perfect.
No, they're not perfect.
They just
actually,
up your odds. They improve your odds.
This is the thing
odds.
About masks. Unless you're wearing an N100, it really only works with universal masking.
So it works best when it's right. Both ways, and it's a right. Dramatic improvement.
Dramatic improvement. Because 5% of a room full of virus yes. Is enough to make you sick.
Right. So I don't know. How do we wind this one up, Gracie?
I don't know. I think we're fucked. Oh, sorry, was that wrong?
This is the, wind up the podcast, not not COVID.
Oh, well, I think in your context, dear listener, whoever you might be, I think this is enough information for you to maybe shift some decisions you're making or confirm decisions you've already made or are making, to do your best to keep yourself and your family safe.
Yeah, do your own research, but don't let your research just be like demagogues on YouTube or whatnot.
Oh, right,
but,
sure, no. Or demagogues on Twitter, however that may be.
Yeah.
But, and there are people who are successfully mitigating transmission within their own homes once one person is sick. That
yes.
Is actually not necessarily possible for everyone,
yes.
But it is possible for some. So,
it can be done.
Avail yourself of that information.
Yeah.
It's worth having. You should arm yourself with it.
I do want to point out, it seems like there's some data, a lot of anecdata, I guess you would say, a lot of reports.
Yep.
That with Omicron, you wind up with symptoms early.
Yes.
Even before you test positive.
Right.
And so you should also regard symptoms as telling you that there's a good chance you're infected.
Right.
And test, and then if you're negative, don't assume you're not positive. I mean really early, like literally the next day after exposure, you have
right.
Symptoms.
Right.
And this is actually because you're probably either vaccinated or have a previous
exposure,
and your immune system kicks into overdrive as soon as it encounters the virus, which is what gives you the symptoms.
Right.
And that is happening with Omicron.
A lot.
And also, we're not, that the efficacy of the test as far as detecting COVID is lower.
It's lower.
And people aren't talking about just how much lower, right. But I believe that it's lower. And mm-hmm. Also, you're likely to have symptoms before you will test positive on an antigen screen.
Right.
So take that into account as well. Mm-hmm. I don't have citations and papers to give you on that. I'd follow a lot of epidemiologists who seem to be more trustworthy
than Leah Wynn.
Than some others.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, I wanted to talk about other fun things, but I think we're going to wind it up.
That's about it.
Because
I'm
we're
no
back.
Fun these days.
We're
I'm
done
sorry.
With our walk. Yeah, we're not fun. We're not. Cassandra's never welcome.
No.
You know, but hey, we're going to have a really cool play structure.
And we're going to have a great dinner.
We're going to have a nice dinner.
And the lilies are back for Easter.
The lilies are where?
They're just poking out.
Oh, I can't show you,
those
listener.
Lilies gave me?
Oh, there they are.
There.
Yeah. So it's spring. Nature is healing, even if humans are not. All right. Take care, everyone. Bye.